It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey at 1:45. Where are we at in society? Zay will let us know. At 1:30, I need to get Justin Wells' thoughts on the NIL law that is officially on the books for the state of Texas. What does that mean for college athletes? And what the hell is the catch? That is not being talked about enough just yet. And in mere minutes, we preview the College World Series with Dustin McComas of Orange Bloods. I'm Trey Elling. Isaiah Collier is behind the glass, and sitting across from me is the great Justin Wells. You can check him out on Twitter at JustinWells2424, and of course at InsideTexas.com. Let's go to the Vaqueros Hotline now and welcome a guy for at least a couple more weeks to this program, as he does every Friday at 1 o'clock. He is Dustin McComas of Orange Bloods. Dustin, thank you for the time. Before we get going with the official stuff, congratulations on the new job, man. It sounds like a really cool gig for you.
Thanks, I appreciate it. As you guys both know, I'm a baseball junkie, so this will fuel that urge 24/7 as I kind of start this new venture. I'll be at a lot of high school baseball games and around a lot of baseball people, so appreciate it, and very excited about this new chapter. But let's hope an Omaha stay is for more than a couple days, like the last one was when I was there in 2018.
Yeah, it really is a picture-perfect way to end your OB career, getting to cover this baseball team in Omaha, and the only thing that makes it better is if this team makes that run. Just how realistic is their chances of getting to that championship series and actually winning it all this year?
I think they've got a real shot, you know, and I felt that when they went there in 2018, they didn't, you know, it felt like they'd maximized that group by simply getting it to the College World Series. And a very candid David Pierce earlier this week basically said the same thing. You know, it was kind of like this feeling like, you know, all right, like we got to Omaha, like Texas was supposed to get to, knowing that it was only second year at the job and knowing that it was just kind of this new regime and roster turnover and everything like that. This feels way different, you know, just being around this team, watching them on a gamely basis. They just have always seemed like they have a mission, you know, to go to Omaha and compete for a title. And, you know, watching them after they won the regional, the super regional, is like, okay, they're excited, they celebrated, and it was like, all right, like, we're ready for what's next. And that was just a totally different vibe than I got from the 2018 group. So, as you guys know, when you go up there, you've got to be able to pitch. And if you've got the pitching depth that they have, especially if you're able to win a game and kind of spread out that schedule a little bit, it can make a huge difference. And that's what they have, is the pitching depth, probably more starting pitching depth than anybody in that tournament.
Hey, Dustin, Justin Wells here. Excellent segue, my man, because that was going to be my next question. Let's talk pitching. Ty Madden, Tristan Stevens, Pete Hansen. Is there another team in the College World Series that has a better 1-2-3 rotation than UT?
I don't think so. You know, obviously Vanderbilt is loaded. You're talking about Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, two guys that are probably going to be top 10 overall picks in the upcoming Major League Baseball draft. But their number three isn't as strong as Texas' number three is, especially the way that Hansen's throwing right now. I mean, as you guys know, I mean, he spent most of the season trying to build back up and get right after an unusual offseason, unusual preseason. And boy, has he looked right of late, especially that last start in the Austin Regional. So I don't think anybody can match Texas 1-2-3. And I'll be curious to see how aggressive Texas gets in that first game against Mississippi State. You know, David Pierce kind of left the door open for potentially using Pete Hansen in a bullpen-type role, because if you start 2-0, you're probably not playing until Friday. So, and even if you're 1-1, you're probably not playing until Thursday. So you could conceivably bring in a guy like Hansen for a matchup, for an inning, two innings, something like that, and turn around and still start him in a Thursday game if you choose to go that route. So, I don't think anybody in Omaha can match that 1-2-3. They don't have the power stuff of some of these other starters. But in terms of depth, there's not a third starter out there that can match what Texas is going to have.
Dustin, are you concerned at all with the lack of production from the 3, 4, 5 spots in the order this last weekend, or do you expect those guys to turn things around pretty quickly?
I think Zach Zubia is fine. You know, he had a couple balls he hit in that last super regional game that reached the warning track and looked like he was timing well. He's been so steady throughout the year, I'm not concerned at all about him. You know, Ivan Melendez, you know, ever since he's had that insane run where he just hit a homer every single game for like almost two full weeks, He hasn't quite been the same. He's been seeing a lot more breaking balls, seeing a lot more spin. That can give him some issues at times. I think his confidence has kind of gone up and down of late. If he can get going with a strong first game, I think he'll be fine. But, you know, if there is a weakness for this Texas team, it is that they do have a line that can swing and miss too much, you know, and they're going to see some power arms. They're going to see one against Mississippi State. You know, as Mississippi State's pitching staff as a staff had over 700 strikeouts this year, which is just an absurdly good number. So they're going to see some power pitching in game one, and if there is a weakness for the Longhorns, they can swing and miss a little bit too much, and then they're trying to focus on putting the ball in play because, you know, they can score in such a variety of ways, either with small ball, stealing a bag, hit something in the gap, or maybe driving the ball out of the yard on occasion. But not concerned at all about Zubia. Melendez, I think he needs to start strong so he can get that confidence back.
Is there something technically he needs to be doing a little bit differently? You're obviously a guy who sees this sport very well. You're about to shift careers into where you're actually watching a lot more baseball. Is there something that you're seeing out of him right now that he is just not doing properly when it comes to taking at-bats?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, earlier this season, they did a really good job with him in terms of hand positioning and a slight change. And it's starting to get him on time more. Now, he's a guy that he's got such great natural power that he really doesn't have to sell out and take gigantic hacks to get to his power. But his power is when he catches the ball out in front of the plate a little bit. So I think that we saw some in the Big 12 tournament that his backside kind of got away from him a little bit, collapsing some. And that can happen sometimes when you're seeing a lot more breaking stuff, a lot more off-speed stuff. And you're almost kind of changing that swing a little bit. So kind of getting to that backside a little bit more and just getting out in front and catching the ball and just driving it with that natural power is probably the adjustment that they're trying to make with him.
Dustin, when Texas added Mike Antico, the graduate transfer from St. John's, it was, you know, inside baseball people know that this was a pretty big get, but it went, you know, a little under the radar. How big has Antico been for Texas and what's solidifying that leadoff spot?
Yeah, he's been huge. He's been huge. I think that, you know, he's the tone setter for this group, just with the way he takes at bats at that leadoff spot, and I forget what his slash line is in the postseason. Obviously, a small sample size, but it's postseason baseball. But it's absurd. I mean, I think he's hitting like almost 700. I think he's slugging almost 900. He's getting on base a ton, and when he gets on first, he's probably going to end up on second base, you know, just with his speed and his knack for stealing bases. But it's a huge get. You know, when that happened, you know, I told Texas fans, hey, I think this guy is going to be better than what Duke Ellis was. And that wasn't a knock on Duke Ellis. You know, when they lost Duke Ellis, it's like, man, that kind of changes their lineup. He was so consistent. He was so competitive. He saw a ton of pitches. He got on base. He had some speed. But Antico's got the pop, too. And I think he carries himself a little bit more competitiveness. Ever since that series at Kansas State, I think he got down to, he was like 203 batting average-wise. And people are kind of questioning, man, are they going to have to bench him? You know, what, this guy was supposed to be really good. And he started to shorten his swing a little bit, and it just really unlocked his confidence. And he's been a force since then. So he's been a huge get. Make no mistake, I don't think they're in Omaha without Mike Antico. What he's meant to them, kind of that edge he provides, the way he carries himself at the top of the order, he really does a great job of setting the tone for that lineup.
Dustin, as far as some of the competition Texas may be going up against, I guess let's start with their side of the bracket and maybe move on from there. But as far as their side of the bracket goes, who is Texas' biggest threat to make it to that championship series?
I think it's Mississippi State. You know, you look at their top of the lineup with Rowdy Jordan and Tanner Allen. I think Tanner Allen's almost hitting like 500 his last 2 months or something absurd like that, SEC Player of the Year. That offense is going to go as those two guys go. The offense behind them has been a little inconsistent, but they can drive the ball. They'll punish you for some mistakes. So, you know, in their bullpen, too. You know, Landon Sims, I don't know if you guys have seen him. Man, is he fun to watch. Not fun to hit against, I can tell you that from watching some of the at-bats, but he just throws a really explosive fastball and a big-time breaking ball. You know, just with the power arms that Mississippi State has, they don't have the starting pitching depth, but they're one of those teams that got really two good frontline starters that can miss bats. They're one of those teams that are going to be super dangerous if they jump out to a, you know, even just win a game and stay out of that elimination game in as early as possible. I think they're probably going to be Texas' biggest competition. I really like the way Tennessee's playing. They're really good. But I just sometimes you look at these teams that go to Omaha and they're built on power. And if that park plays the way it normally does and the wind blows the way it typically does, it's hard to drive the ball out of there consistently. You've got to be able to score runs in different ways. And, you know, sometimes I wonder about those teams that just they're built on power, 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 and they go up there and they got to figure out another way to do it.
Is Vanderbilt the biggest competition on the other side?
I think so, yeah. You know, with Rocker and Leiter, I mean, just if they get to a championship series at best of three and you're facing those two guys in 2 to 3 games, it's tough. I mean, we remember the show that Kumar Rocker put on in 2019 when Vanderbilt went up there. So I do think they're the favorite. But that early matchup against Arizona is fascinating because I think Arizona is really good, really good offense. But it's just a tall task facing Rocker and Leiter in game one. You know, Stanford has been red hot as well, but they're another one of those teams that kind of uncharacteristically for Stanford is very power-based with their offense. So I wonder how that offense is going to play up in TD Ameritrade. It played great in Lubbock, but as you guys know, Lubbock is a launching pad, especially when the wind's blowing out a certain way. So, but I do think Stanford could potentially make some noise there. I would really like Arizona if they weren't playing Vanderbilt in that first game.
So what's your prediction? What happens over the next week and a half or so? Who's playing in that championship series, and who do you have winning it all right now?
It's hard to pick against Vanderbilt because their best position to be 2-0 in that first bracket. And if you're 2-0, it's just such a gigantic advantage for what you can do. So I've got Vanderbilt coming out of that side, and I actually have Texas coming out of the other side. Because even if Texas did drop a game, they just have such great starting pitching depth that they could pitch their way back into it. Sort of like they did in 2014 when they had Chad Hollingsworth and Parker French and Nathan Thornhill. They had John Curtis in the back end of games. They just had such great pitching depth that they could hang around there for a while, and they were, you know, a break away from getting to that championship series. So I got those two teams coming out of it. And unfortunately for Texas fans, I just think in a three-game series, it's really hard to pick against Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter. So I do have Vanderbilt winning it all. I guess that's not really going out on too far of a limb. But I will say, I think this is a pretty open College World Series. I don't think that there is a slam dunk overwhelming favorite in either side of the bracket. There's a lot of teams that are capable of making a run and getting to that championship series.
Dustin, the state of Texas became the latest to put an NIL law on the books earlier this week, allowing its college athletes to profit off of name, image, and likeness beginning July 1st. How do you think this is going to play out over the next couple of months and then also long terms? And is there a catch that nobody is really thinking about right now that may lead to less of these guys actually making money than they think is possible right now?
Yeah, I'll start with that last part. That's a good question. I guess the catch would be, like, I think everybody's just kind of assuming that, like, okay, like, you know, you can, people are just going to reach out to a player and then they're going to strike a deal on something. It's like, that's not going to be that easy. There's going to be a lot of red tape and compliance stuff, and you've got to go about this the appropriate legal way when you're doing this sort of thing. And I think it's very much going to be a process as everybody just kind of gets used to this new frontier of, okay, like, you know, this is great, and, you know, I think Texas is obviously really prepared for it, one of the most prepared programs in the country, and I think they're going to be at an advantage because they're already dedicating some resources to it. They have the athletic department size to where they can, you know, the size and resources to go hire people to help these guys through this process, and not everybody's going to have that opportunity. But I would say the catch is, like, everybody's going to have to figure out the right way to do this to make sure eligibility is not an issue, to make sure there's nothing legally that becomes an issue. You know, what if a player agrees to a deal with so-and-so in exchange for money and all of a sudden the deal is the one he thought it was, or the employer doesn't think that it was done the right way, and all of a sudden you've got this legal back-and-forth thing about money, like, you know, it's a new frontier. Like, I don't know what it's going to look like now. I don't know what it's going to look like in the future. I'm glad the players are getting these rights, though. It's long, long overdue. But I do think it's going to be initially tough to navigate the red tape, the legal stuff just to make sure everybody is doing this the right way. It's not as simple as, oh, okay, like Joe Blow from a car dealership is going to show up and start handing these guys money. That's not how it's going to work. There's going to be a process, the way to do this the right way.
It looks like the College Football Playoff Committee may be on the verge of expanding the playoff from the current four-team format all the way up to 12 teams, something that may start as early as 2023. Do you think 12 is the right number of teams? And in a perfect world, how many teams would you expand the playoff to?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know if 12 is perfect, but I definitely like 12 more than 4. For me, a perfect number includes all the major conference champions. Like, I think if you win your conference, that's gotta mean something, especially for these conferences that have conference championship games as well. So any number that includes all of them, I think you do need to have at least one spot for, you know, the Central Floridas of the world or whoever is that non-Power 5 team that's really good and really undefeated through their regular season. I think they need to have a chance. So I'm okay with 12 considering the bye element. I would hope that they wouldn't do neutral site stuff early on. That would really stink. It would kind of reek of a money grab type situation for expanding the playoff. But I'm totally okay with 12. You know, I think what college football is kind of running into right now is a lack of parity. It's almost NBA-ish sometimes to where you start a season now and you're like, okay, there's only a handful of teams that could legitimately win the national championship and probably only a few more that can make the playoff. Just because there's such disparity right now in what Alabama's doing and Clemson and Ohio State and Georgia and the way these programs are recruiting. So I like the idea of expanding it. It gets more fan bases involved. I think it helps. It's going to help spread the talent more across the country to where there's not the same five teams loading up with all of the best players every single year, and it's going to add some more parity to the sport, which I think is needed right now.
I'd love to see them go with a square 16. That means every first-round matchup, which includes the top four, is a home game for those teams, and then you can go to the bowl games from there. But I guess we'll find out for sure at some point over the next couple of weeks. And Dustin, I was reminded this week that your Pittsburgh Steelers have a new OC, and that is Matt Canada, a guy that I am really high on, despite the fact that he remained fairly unsettled at the college ranks over these last few years. Are you pretty encouraged? Are you optimistic with what you're hearing about the Steelers offense based on Matt Canada taking the reins on that side of the ball?
I became optimistic the time they made the change simply because the Steelers were the most predictable offense in the NFL last year, and I'm not sure it was close. Like, when they were in the shotgun, they were throwing. When they were under center, they were running. And you could see it happening as the season progressed. Like, halfway through the season, they stopped being able to score points in the first half because they were so predictable. And I think from what we know about Matt Canada, he's not afraid to push the envelope. He's not afraid to be different, to be creative, to kind of, you know, have those percentages in mind and change things up and keep offenses off balance. So, yeah, I'm excited. It was a much-needed change. The Steelers just flat out too predictable on offense. It showed in their numbers, and I'm excited to see something different. Obviously, Ben Roethlisberger is going to have a big say in the way they run that offense because, you know, who knows if this is going to be his last season, but that last season is coming soon. But I'm definitely excited to see some more creativity going against the grain a little bit more on offense.
All right, last couple of things are going to be a little bit more personal because I am curious to know about your end of days with Orange Bloods. Even though you'll still be a part of that community, you will not be on the employee side of things. You will be more on the, hopefully, comp subscription side of things. What will you miss most about working for Orange Bloods?
Oh, that's a great question. The people, you know, the people, and this is something you guys know, and obviously, Justin, you know well, working for Inside Texas is, the really unique aspect of what we do is the online community-based thing, and you build relationships with people over the years, and then you start seeing the people, you know, whether it's at tailgates or speaking events or just random places when you're traveling. I mean, it's just such a unique job to where, like, you have this online community that you're just interacting with on a daily basis. And, you know, just over the years, you just get to know people and you see the community rally around, you know, each other and you know, when somebody's going through some issues and things like that. But it'll definitely be the people. It'll definitely be telling stories as well. I mean, it's really fun to cover these guys in the recruiting process, and then you see them get to Texas or wherever, and you follow their careers, and you see them kind of, you know, reach their dreams and either go professional or go to the business world or whatever it is. It's really fun to follow those guys' journeys, but definitely the people aspect, you know, just whether it's relationships on campus or with our online community or whatever it is. It's just been a lot of fun over 15 years. I feel like I know so many people just from a screen name, where I've been able to build so many friendships for meeting people through orangebloods.com, and that's definitely what I'll miss the most.
Is the people also what you'll miss the least? And if not, what is?
Yes, come on, that's yes, yes, absolutely. Like, I'll be honest. Like, I'm ready to hand in my staff badge, and I'm ready to get drunk and fire some people. You know, while I'm on the internet, who are we firing this game? Like, all right, like, we need a new offensive coordinator. Cool, let's fire that guy. You know, so yeah, there's definitely that element too. Like, hey, I always joke with the newspaper guys, like, you guys get to publish your stuff, and then you don't have to read the internet. Like, we got to read the internet and what they're all saying and stuff like that. So there's definitely an element of that. Like, if Texas loses a game early next season, I'm gonna be like, man, I'm not going to miss reading the message board.
Oh, that's great. Well, Dustin, it's been a pleasure getting to speak with you for these last few years. And I know we'll get the chance to talk with you one more time at least next week when Chad is back in the fray. But thank you for all the great work that you've done at Orange Bloods over that time and joining us as often as you have. It's been a real joy, man, and we wish you nothing but the best at that next stop.
Hey, guys, really, really appreciate it. Let's hope we're still talking about the College World Series next week.
Absolutely. Hey, Dustin, also, whenever you come through East Texas, we got some baseball players up there. If you ever make it to Tyler, give me a holler, and I'll take you to Stanley's.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know they got some talent up there in all sports, and I'll hold you to that.
Cool. Safe travels up to Omaha, Dustin.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there he is, Dustin McComas. Coming up on the other side, we will talk about the NIL law that is now on the books here in the state of Texas. Need to get Justin Wells' thoughts on things because he talks to a lot of people behind the scenes. Curious to know what they think, what Justin thinks is going to happen, and is there an underrated element, a catch that none of us are really talking about just yet? You're listening to Shirts and Skins. Chad Hastings on vacation this week. You're on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Back here on Shirts and Skins, Chad Hastings on vacation for another half a show. I've had a slew of people joining me in the co-host chair this week. And today, it is Justin Wells from 12 to 3. Isaiah Collier is behind the glass, and these guys are having fun. I'm guessing spitting what would be the lyrics if this wasn't an instrumental bet. Is that right, guys?
Yes, we are.
Who is this?
Pop.
Tupac. Sheds so many tears.
Shed so many tears? Okay.
Or so many tears, what it called.
Tupac would have turned 50 this week, Justin.
We're getting old, Trey.
Yes, we are. I didn't realize
he may have still turned 50. I mean, we don't know that. I've heard he may have one of those islands out there with Master P.
Just wanted to escape the mess, huh?
Wouldn't you?
Wait, Master P is still alive.
I know, but he collects those islands.
Oh, Master P does?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so, in the Pacific somewhere?
I have no idea where they're at, but apparently when you get to a status symbol, you buy an island.
So it's Tupac, Biggie, Elvis.
I'm not going that far. I'm not going that far, but Tupac... You know, you never know.
It's weird to think that Tupac and Phil Mickelson are essentially the same age. Phil Mickelson, a year older than Tupac. They share a birthday.
How in the world could you? Oh, they share a birthday?
Yeah.
I was wondering how you would put those two together.
Yeah, it's. I mean,
they're both left-handed.
We do the. Is Tupac left-handed?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Anyhow, yes. Tupac would have been 50 as of this week, or maybe he is 50, if you believe the conspiracy theory. That begets an interesting question. What is you guys' favorite conspiracy theory to talk about? We have the most famous conspiracy theory. That would be JFK. But do you have a favorite conspiracy theory in the sports world or otherwise? Whether it's Michael Jordan actually getting suspended for a year and a half for gambling on Bulls games, or Ray Lewis... That pre-Super Bowl bit. something along those lines or something completely different? Zay, you have a favorite conspiracy theory?
Yeah, mine has to be Mike, MJ.
The MJ gambling for a year or getting busted and getting suspended for a year and a half?
Yeah, it makes MJ sense. Controlled the league. The NBA would have lost a lot of money if MJ would have been criticized as being a bad guy, which the best player in the NBA right now is that, but that's here, near there.
Luke is a good guy. Come on, Zay.
Zay? Response?
Luka is a great guy. That is true. He's playing right now for his country. So
he just threw a lob right now. They're playing over there right now.
Yeah, the fact that he's playing is absolutely ridiculous. Like, man, rest your body. Come on.
That's what 22 years old does to you.
Well, especially after last year, too, where they ended up having to play so late into the year and then turning around, what, less than 2 months later, the teams that made it to the finals.
Yeah, I bet you Donnie Nelson probably told Luka to rest up.
Probably. Oh, Don Nelson's like, Luka, do what you want. It's not going to matter for me next year.
I think there could be a little conspiracy in 2006 in the NBA Finals. Dallas goes up two games, and then after that, Dwayne Wade goes on to shoot 247 free throws over the final four games.
They were about to go up 3-0 in that series before the refs decided
They were up 12
right.
with 9 minutes left in the game.
Right. Before the refs decided to absolutely swallow the whistles on one end, and I'm not even going to say call tic-tac fouls anymore. They were... If Dwayne Wade got the basketball and drove to the basket and shoot, he could have had a wide open lane. Oh. A foul was going
whistle.
To be called.
Whistle. That's my conspiracy. I think they wanted Shaq, more time with Shaq. I think they wanted to give the Heat a better chance. And by the time they were so keyed into it, Cuban had pissed off the league with comments. Avery Johnson had pissed off the refs with comments, and the team was flustered because they knew what they were going against. That's my conspiracy theory. 2006 NBA Finals fixed.
Mine is that Stevie Wonder isn't really blind.
Oh,
Zay.
My God.
Come on, man. Come on. We talked about this. The great Stevie Wonder, Motown's finest.
He is great. He also catches mic stands that are falling in front of him and is giving rogue high fives out when he's driving through airports on the backs of carts.
And like Chris Rock says, he could be wealthy. He could be rich. He could have a stack of hundreds, or they could be ones.
No, the point is that he knows they're not ones deep down. Even if he's going back and forth acting like, oh yeah, the stack of hundreds right here, he really knows deep down.
The man has one of the greatest ears of all time for music, for writing music, making music. He also has a sixth sense to where he could feel things around him without seeing, because he can't.
Oh, okay, so Stevie Wonder has such a great ear that he's Spider-Man now, is what you're telling me. What, can he climb walls too?
You said sixth sense. I mean, is he really a ghost?
Does he see dead people?
Yeah. He doesn't see anybody but dead people. That is a story.
Yeah.
Yo, Stevie Wonder's versatile. I'm not going to let y'all wreck his name like Trey's been doing for the last 20 years.
Stevie Wonder is goat status. I'm just saying he might be able to see... Not all the way, but a little bit more than most of us thought for all these years.
I wouldn't put it past Berry Gordy, because he was the ultimate businessman.
That is true.
I wouldn't put it past him by saying, you know what, Stevie? Let's see if you could pull off this blind act, and let's see how far it takes us.
Do you remember when he did a cameo on The Cosby Show?
Yes.
Trey, if he could see, he probably wouldn't have been there. He could have seen that coming.
Wow. I'm just going to let that one resonate for a second. By the way, it's Felicia Rashad's birthday today. My original crush. Go back all those years.
Ahmad's wife. University of Oregon, Minnesota Viking wide receiver.
Yes, that's right. Was she U of O too, or did they meet as adults?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
She was my original crush, though. All right, we'll leave that one there. Somebody's saying Jeffrey Epstein committing suicide is their favorite conspiracy theory. Yeah, that's a pretty good one. Real quick, though, Justin, the state of Texas passed a law this week allowing its athletes to profit off of name, image, and likeness, which in theory is a great idea. It's a long time coming now. There might be a catch, though. What are your initial thoughts on kids in this state being able to profit as early as anybody else in this country starting on July 1st.
Well, it's not just this state. There are a handful of other states that have passed the same legislation.
I think they're the sixth state that allows it on July 1st.
Right. It gets enacted on July 1st. Texas was one of the best at getting in early. They've been having actual meetings with players and staffers for 6 months now to prepare for what they're about to do. It's been such a popular subject, not just in the last couple of years when it became more and more relevant and more likely to happen, but even for the last 20 or 30 years. I believe in the beginning of this decade or last decade, you know, Johnny Manziel wasn't able, you know, he catches fire as a redshirt freshman, wins the Heisman, and he's unable to capitalize on it, you know, with autographs and signings and things of that sort. We come to find out later, I think it was reported a few months ago, that he had mentioned he made about 30 grand after that year doing just that. They should be allowed to do that. That to me is a good example. They should be allowed to show up to an HEB and do signings and take pictures. And, you know, it's if they're willing to put in that time, if Bijan Robinson wants to set aside 3 hours of his day to go to an HEB or to go to a Torchy's or, you know, somewhere like that and sign photos and take, you know, sign pictures and, you know, things of that sort, more power to him. Let him do that. But at the end of the day, I don't know how much of it is going to really affect most players. You're going to have to be recognizable. You're going to have a brand that is growing in order to generate real money, to generate real attention and revenue. And so, but to me, this is the NCAA trying to make up for the last 100 years of horrible decisions and saying, look, these guys should have an opportunity. You know, there was a story that came out last year where Sam Ehlinger could have essentially made $1 million while he was the quarterback at Texas with all the endorsements and things that he could have done and a year before. And so there's some value to it, and I think these guys need to understand that and give Texas credit. If you know, when we ask recruits what stands out about the University of Texas, one of the first things they mention is NIL. Their plan is fantastic. They put a presentation together that blows parents away. Not just, you know, the you know, just the ideas of branding, the ideas of getting deals, of contracts, things of that sort, but also the reinvesting. They're talking about putting them in, you know, 401ks, putting them in IRAs, you know, reinvesting some of that revenue. There's plans in place to get this done and for players to benefit from it. I just hope they understand it's not going to be this big payday that everyone thinks it's going to be. It's going to be much more level-headed.
Can I bring up a couple of reasons why it's not going to be a massive payday for most guys?
Lay it on me.
One, I talked about this on the show earlier this week. If you read the fine print of the Texas law, and I think pretty much every other state that has a law on the books, and it's 18 total, I want to say, they initiate at various points over literally the next 2 to 3 years. Ironically, California, which is one of the worst run states on the planet, even though they were the first to start the legislative process, they don't even begin their law until the start of 2023 for whatever stupid reason. But for Texas and everybody else, it actually says in the laws that you can't use your status as an athlete for that school as part of a selling point and an endorsement. So Bijan Robinson, it's not going to be as big of an issue for him because he has name recognition, or a Sam Ehlinger, or the starting quarterback for whatever team. For a lot of these other guys, though, who can't say, hey, this is so-and-so at the University of Texas telling you about this product, that's not allowed, which is going to really diminish the values that most of these guys have in terms of their ability to sell themselves. And I even wonder with things like mass autograph sessions. Schools cannot line these things up for them. So who is going to do that for them? Who is going to set these deals up for these guys? I realize that they can hire somebody with a law degree to help them out here, but until these college athletes, and I almost hate to use this word, but it has to happen for them to get on the same page and to gain certain things right now that do not currently exist with the legislation that's in place, until they can actually utilize the school that they represent as part of their endorsement, this is not going to mean really anything for most of these guys, unless they can get some massive social media presence, unless they can get a bunch of followers on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, whatever else, and monetize that way, most of these guys are still going to be living pretty dirt poor in terms of the college athlete experience.
There's so much to unpack there. And understand, you know, who's going to broker these deals? Well, you know, an agent can contact them now. Whereas previously, they couldn't talk to an agent in college.
An agent who has the law degree, but that's most agents.
Right. Exactly. And so agents can contact them now. Can you imagine how dirty that process might get yeah. into? Especially if you don't have a mother and father that are educated and understand the business world. Some do, some don't. That's going to be a thorn. You know, another rule that I was told.
And by the way, real quick, you talk to a lot of people behind the scenes, including current players. How many of these guys are getting hit up by agents at this point? Even though it's not necessarily even legal until July 1st.
Yeah, just speaking with parents, reaching out to parents, the thing is that they're being taught that, you know, you want to be proactive. You want to go out and try to find things that you can do, but you can't use, if you go out and approach these companies, you can't use the University of Texas. And think about that. Think about using that logo. That's half of the draw. That's half of your platform right there is being able to say, I'm Texas running back Bijan Robinson, or I'm Texas linebacker DeMarvion Overshown. If you approach the company, you can't use that. You can't use that. And so I think there's going to be a lot to unpack here. I think some schools are much more prepared than others. I know that Texas has been tremendous in their approach and being proactive and being ready. And I think once this all drops, we're going to see more rules come out that we didn't understand. I think players are going to learn more that they may not have understood. And also the NCAA, this is the first time doing this. So I think there's going to be an element of the wild, wild west as well.
Well, the NCAA has no say-so right now either, because there's not going to be federal legislation that's passed. So the NCAA, who's already terrible at implementing and enforcing the laws on the books, they do so in such a cherry-picked manner, and there's no consistency there. They're going to be powerless with a lot of these states that have come up with their own laws on things, because the NCAA was so slow to actually get with the times and actually figure something out that could be consensus across the board.
For current players, absolutely. The NCAA is not going to have a say. For recruiting, they will. Because they can still operate under the dead period. They can still shut this whole state down, this whole country down when it comes to recruiting, comes to guys taking visits, coaches leaving. They can shut all that down quickly. You would hope that they would have a Bill of Rights. You would hope that they would have something that's standard across the board for all of them. Because now you'll have some states with some rules and some states with other rules. Well, how is it competitive then? Because it's everybody's operating off of a different set of standards. Mark Few brought that up, I believe, a couple weeks ago when he was discussing NIL. It needs to be something across the board that's equal. I think the players are going to learn this is a wonderful opportunity for them to generate revenue off of their name, image, and their likeness, but there's going to be a lot of stipulations, there's going to be a lot of small rules, and I don't think this is going to be the big payday that a lot of these kids believe it is.
He is Justin Wells of Inside Texas. We may get back into this conversation after the top of the hour. Isaiah Collier is behind the glass. Chad Hastings on vacation for today, and then he'll be back on Monday. Coming up next, it's Where Are We At in Society. Isaiah Collier will let us know here on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Back here on Shirts and Skins, Chad Hastings on vacation, Justin Wells sitting across from me, Isaiah Collier spinning the dials, playing music coming out of commercial breaks. This is Michael Jackson, correct?
Son.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough, Trey. That's tough.
New Edition. Each member went solo or onto a separate group after they joined
Bobby
in the early
Brown.
80s. Bobby Brown, Belle Biv DeVoe, Ralph Tresvant, Keith Sweat, Johnny Gill.
So that's a good point, Trey. They wanted Ralph to be the lead singer because he's the one you just heard. He sounds the most like Michael Jackson. But that's why Bobby and everybody had a problem, because
lyrics made it seem like it might be Dirty Diana, but I know what Dirty Diana sounds like. He's talking about a girl who's trying to pull one over on him. Clearly not Dirty Diana, but that was my guess, so I apologize. I failed the 80s music quiz today.
Yeah, they asked Ralph when he was like 8 or 9. They're like, yo, man, we want you. And Ralph was like, no, it's the group or no me.
Really?
Yeah, the New Edition was created.
He only had one good solo album. That was it. I thought there would be more from him. He did the Mo Money soundtrack. He had Stone Cold Gentleman's Sensitivity, which is an all-time classic, but he didn't do anything else after that. The rest of those guys' careers took off.
Yeah, Bell Biv DeVoe, they're still playing at house parties to this day. And clearly we know what happened with Bobby Brown and Bucky, who loves Johnny Gill. Like, Bucky still listens to Johnny Gill.
Absolutely.
To this day. Like, he's always trying to put me on new Johnny Gill. I'm like, Bucky, Johnny Gill's like 65 years old. I'm good.
I didn't know there was new Johnny Gill.
Keith Sweat crushed it, too, as a solo artist. A
little bit.
Yeah, he did.
His album Nobody went pretty big in 96, 97.
What was the song?
Nobody. How did the song go? Nobody.
How did the song go?
Who can love you like me?
Nobody.
Who can kiss you like me?
Nobody.
Who can give you what you want?
Nobody.
Nobody,
me.
Baby.
Thank you. That just made my week. All right. Where are we at in society? That's where we're freaking out in society, but we still need to hit the Mike Gundy sounder.
Where are we at in society today?
All right, Zay, what do you got for us today?
All right, let's stay on the Happy Father's Day trend.
Yes.
Both of you guys are fathers. Justin Wells, Happy Father's Day. I already told Trey yesterday.
And Happy Doggy Daddy Father's
Day.
No,
we don't
you.
Do that where I'm from. No, that's a very, let's just say, European style.
Oh, that,
to go with.
That's a, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
That is an everyone gets a trophy move right
yes.
there. So I apologize. I rescind my Happy Father's Day to you.
Thank you. Thank you. So since you guys are fathers, let me paint the picture for y'all on this bogus story. A pregnant woman called her boyfriend to come to her job to fight one of her employees.
That is not cool.
The boyfriend showed up, and you probably know what happened after.
He got his ass kicked?
Got his ass kicked. Got suplexed it twice to where there's just a photo going around where homeboy at the job had him in the air like Mark Henry used to do cats back in the day and dropped him on the pavement. Twice.
That takes being really bad at fighting to actually get suplexed in a true-on fight once, much less twice.
Oh, it's twice. So, I ask you guys, whose fault is this? Because, again, you got to protect your woman to a certain extent.
It's the female's fault. Let's be honest. We've all had a girlfriend that ran her mouth a little too much and almost got us into some stuff we weren't supposed to be in.
You know what? I'm going to jerk this one into the cornfield. I'm going to take the steering wheel and jerk it into the cornfield. This is the fetus's fault, guys.
Oh, man. You got to elaborate.
Well, pregnancy causes women, even the craziest woman, to act that much more nuts. My guess is that as nutso as this lady is, she's even more off her rocker because she has another life form growing inside of her uterus right now.
Well, in the video, she tries to hold him off.
Oh, come on. This is not high school seniors versus juniors acting like they want to fight one another and slowing up just before they get to the action so that their classmates can hold them off. She knew exactly what she was doing when she was calling for her dude to come to work to fight this guy. It was a feeble attempt by her to try and walk this one back once she realized what was already about to happen.
And there needs to be more substance to the story. If this guy put his hands on her, that's a no-brainer. If he crossed a line or a boundary, we need to have a conversation. But I'm telling you, listeners, everybody's had that girlfriend that just maybe had a little too much to drink, coming out of the bar, wants to mouth off a little bit. Before you know it, you're about to throw hands with some dude you've never met because the old girl wants to get cocky.
Yeah, you have that personal experience, huh?
Couple times. That's the easiest breakup of the day. Hope you find a ride home.
Did you have a type in terms of just meeting them to begin with for a while that you had to break that trend?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I've been pretty well-rounded in that regard.
I'm going to take a guess on what this guy did to provoke a fight from the pregnant girlfriend. He just denied putting his hand on her belly to feel the baby kick. He's like, nah, I'm okay. I don't want to feel your baby. I don't want to feel this baby kick.
Oh, my gosh.
And she got offended and called her boyfriend, only to have this guy get embarrassed by getting suplexed twice with a video that is now making the rounds on social media. This guy's life is ruined because he just wasn't good enough at understanding how not to get his person pregnant.
He got
bad
the wrong
job by you, dude.
He got the wrong person pregnant.
That, too. That, too. Zay?
Yeah, I'm with homeboy. He got the wrong woman pregnant. Like, you know what you're getting into. You know she's crazy. Once she would have hit me up and said, yo, they're acting crazy over here. For example, Haven Madrano just called Mia this and that. Okay, cool. When will you be home later? What's for dinner?
Let me just go ahead and let Haven in on something. If the fight is between you and Haven, Haven had better be a little bit worried about getting suplexed twice. And I like Haven a lot. And I think Haven might be a little bit scrappier than you would suggest, judging that book by its cover. Haven v. Isaiah is not going to go well for Haven.
How do you know Haven doesn't have a Tom Cruise type of, you know, Mission Impossible, I might be small, but I pack a powerful punch look to him?
Oh, I think Haven has the Tom Cruise thing going on. It's why I'm predicting you in that fight to suplex his ass a couple of times. Hell, you may rock bottom him by the time it's all said and done.
I would hate to be on that side of it because from what I've learned about Isaiah, he's one of the nicest guys in the world. I don't want to see the other side of that dude. Like, everybody's got that dark side. That's not a guy I want to. I would be trying to get along with Haven as much as possible.
Oh, I've seen Zay reach that point.
Oh.
We had to function with some blinds that felt the wrath of one Isaiah Collier a few weeks ago because those blinds were such pieces of crap and finally they got replaced. You do not want to get to that point with Zay because you're right. He is a very chill dude up to a point. Don't go there with him. Otherwise, you'll end up like Haven in Promotions. Suplex twice, rock bottom once, Stone Cold Stunner a couple of times. Hell, he'll probably even undertake your ass before it's all said and done.
Hey, that's what I tell my son. Pay attention. Read the room.
Read the room.
Pay attention
right.
To what? Everything.
Yeah.
Read the room.
Keep your eyes open.
Always.
Sometimes it's better to
head on a swivel.
Keep your head on a swivel, and sometimes it's better to be the one who's kind of sitting back, paying attention to everything, listening to everything, before you decide to speak up.
Amen.
All right, Zay, thank you for today's Where Are We At in Society. Justin Wells sitting across from me because Chad Hastings is on vacation for one more day. Coming up on the other side, we will reset a huge recruiting weekend for Longhorn football this weekend. We might get back into that NIL conversation as well. This is Shirts and Skins on the Horn.